This is Biz. I'm a stay-at-home mom with a preschooler.
And I'm Teresa, a working mom with a toddler.
This is a show about life after giving life. We all need a place to vent, so don't listen with your kids because there will be swears. This is One Bad Mother. Today on One Bad Mother, we talk about support teams and speak with singer-songwriter Eleni Mandel.
Woo!
Yeah.
Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm fine. I got something new this pregnancy.
What?
A rash.
That sounds gross.
It is. So yesterday, I'm like about halfway through the day, not having eaten anything peculiar or done anything peculiar. I'm like, my stomach really itches. And I look at it, and it's covered in like a small, like a very fine rash.
Like bumpy?
Bumpy. Red. Like tiny, tiny bumpy. Oh. So it's not like a whelps. It's like, you know, it looks like a rash.
Yeah.
And then
just a run-of-the-mill rash.
Run-of-the-mill rash. And I was like, that's awful.
Yeah.
And then my side started itching, and then my thigh started itching. And I was like, all right. I've been, like, very anti-looking. Not anti. I haven't bothered to look anything up this pregnancy. I just assume that I'll either throw up or something will hurt if I do something wrong this time around. But I was like, all right, I got to look this up. I look it up, and it's like, yep, your hormones can be causing you to have a rash. And to which I told Stefan, and Stefan's like, the cesspool of chemicals floating around in your body are trying to release themselves through your skin.
Oh.
So, like, and what sucks is it's the belly, and, like, what does every pair of pregnancy pants do? Like, totally cover your belly.
Yeah.
Great. So that's great. But how are you?
Oh, I'm okay. Another pregnancy-related thing. I just need to say bras are the worst. Because the one thing that you really need them to do, which is, like, hold your boobs up.
Yeah.
They can't do it unless they're the exact right size for your boobs.
And when your boobs are changing,
when your boobs are changing every fucking day, then there's no way to have a bra that fits.
Yep.
Unless, like, I was trying to figure it out because I was like, if you get like an actual good, like a really good bra, like one of those like nursing, it's like $50 to $80. And like a couple of times in my last pregnancy, I went, you know what? I need a good bra.
Well, sure.
And so I just bit the bullet and spent the money. And that's fine because I did use them for a while and I know that I will need to use them again.
Right.
But like the amount of time that they get used for is so limited. Because like for example, right now, the bras that I can find around my house.
Just around.
For some reason are all too small or way too big.
Yep.
I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to buy more
bras. Buy it now?
I have so many and they're never going to fit.
I burned mine after the first pregnancy, so I have like nothing. I literally had like two bras going into this total, right?
Yeah.
And not just don't, me.
Yeah.
I'd rather spend the money on a shirt. And so this time around, I was like, well, like 3 weeks ago, I was like, this is the end of this. I'm not going to be able to do this. But what I have found of all the shitty bras that I've gone and bought at Target or Gap in the last like 2 weeks to try and make myself feel like I'm paying attention to the changes in my body,
I like that you acknowledge that Gap is on the same level as Target because they they would like you to think that they're a step above,
but they're really not. They're not. You know, they're
they
all
cost more, but it's essentially. It's essentially the same shitty,
like, here's a wire and some fabric, you know, but, like,
it'll last for 6 months, and then you're done.
And then you're totally boned. But the wireless, They're like, it's like built where it's not supposed to have the wire. It's like firm.
Yeah.
But it's not the wire.
I know what
that
you're
one's
talking
fairly
about.
Comfortable.
Okay.
That one's fairly comfortable. The ones with the wires, ugh.
I even like sleeping now. I'm just really? Wearing a bra. Well, I sort of alternate because the other thing is with the itchy skin, I don't like wearing a bra. Like,
what about the support tanks?
Yeah, they don't really do anything for my boobs.
Well, who are we trying to impress for the next 9 months with her?
No, it's about comfort.
Oh,
like,
okay.
It's about purely about comfort. Like, if I'm gonna, I would rather wear like a loose, t-shirt or top or something just for the sake of letting my skin breathe. Anyways, whatever. We could talk about this forever.
We're
but
good.
Anyways, I just want to say bras annoying me right now.
Yep. Great. Let's just take them off in the booth. Let's just
let's
go.
Let's do that.
Lindsay, our sound engineer, is like, yeah, great. I'm going to just pull the curtain down.
Yeah.
Hey, you know what's kind of funny?
What?
You were just talking about supportive bras. Support systems. And today's topic on the show, this wasn't even like a punny approach.
We're
not. The show is not actually going to be about bras. It's going to be about actually... defining and putting together and figuring out, do you have a support team? Do you not have a support team? How to find a support team once you have kids?
Let's talk about that
as opposed to bras. Okay, great.
Please take a moment to remember, if you're friends of the hosts of One Bad Mother, you should assume that when we talk about other moms, we're talking about you.
If you are married to the host of One Bad Mother, we definitely are talking about you.
Nothing we say constitutes professional parenting advice.
Biz and Teresa's children are brilliant, lovely, and exceedingly extraordinary.
Nothing said on this podcast about them implies otherwise.
Teresa, you've got you.
Yeah.
You've got Jesse.
Yes.
You have Simon.
Yes.
Who else you got?
I have the dogs.
You have the dogs.
We have a lot of loving, supportive family members that live in another place.
Ta-da! We do as well.
Uh-huh.
We have a lot of loving, supportive family members who live in other places. Mm-hmm. Even our closest relatives are Stefan's parents, and they live about hour half away, depending on traffic.
It's pretty good.
It's not bad. It's still long enough away that it's not like, hey, can you come over real quick?
Right.
I gotta go. This thing's just come up.
Right.
Can you
drop in for an hour while she eats her dinner and I run?
Yeah,
out to the
I
store
think about support teams like this. I think about people who I have friends who. Like, both parents work because they live close to one set of grandparents, and the grandparents are watching the kids when the kids aren't in school.
Mm-hmm.
I have friends I know who get the occasional date nights because they can drop their kids off at their cousins, and they spend the night at the cousins that night.
Mm-hmm.
I've got people I've heard tell of, like, oh, yeah, well, I had to go run these errands and I had to go out and have this last minute thing or help these people. So my daughter hung out at my neighbor's house.
Mm-hmm. Those are all great examples.
Those are great examples
systems.
Of things that I don't feel we have.
Yeah.
And like, I'm like, how did you set that up?
I think it might be our own fault.
I do too.
Yeah.
I do too. I know that for me, when we lived in New York and we had Katie Bell, we both had sisters living in New York.
Both your sister and Stefan's sister lived in New York?
Yep.
Okay. Do they have kids?
Nope.
Okay.
Neither one have kids.
Okay.
My sister lives on the Upper East Side. We lived in Brooklyn, so it's about 45 minutes, 50-minute train ride, depending. But in New York, that kind of stuff, sometimes it matters, sometimes it doesn't. Mm-hmm. Depends on the person if you care about that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And Stefan's sister lived out in New Jersey. 30 to 45 minutes to 50 minutes, just depending on the train. There was a brief period of time she did live just up the street from us in Brooklyn. And while she was, like, very involved in coming to visit Katie Bell, there was never that moment of, like, hey, I'm just going to come down. And, like, both of us were kind of raised, not around a lot of kids.
Uh-huh.
So none of us in our family, I think, instinctually say... we want to watch your kids all the time.
Uh-huh. You know, like, I'll take her for a while if you want to go.
And it's not like somebody wouldn't offer it, but I'm talking that, like,
just that sort of like just sort
Carte
of already
blanche.
Being on that level.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah. We're all going to raise yeah. this kid together. We're always yeah. going to be at your house. We're always going to be like, you know, we were all raised to have our own lives.
Yeah.
A little bit. And I see yeah. that being true for sort of Stefan and his sister as well as mine and my, yeah, my sister. So like, again, I just think instinctually mm-hmm. neither side was like, this would be a normal thing for people to always be at each other's house mm-hmm. and drop the kids off.
Yeah.
And then you combine that with Stefan and I, when we had Katie Bell, found ourselves really naturally falling into a more structured routine with her. She mm-hmm. really liked structure. We really liked structure. Mm-hmm. And it really worked for us. But there's something about structure that can feel weird when you ask people to suddenly step into your kid's
yeah.
life. You know,
yeah. Like you can't expect somebody to follow like a crazy list of instructions.
And it only yeah. feels crazy. And it doesn't feel crazy to you
when you're doing
because
it. Right.
You
it's
do
your
it.
Established routine. Right. Right.
But then you're like, well, yeah. you know, the door has to be closed and this noise machine has to be yeah. on and the kitty has to be like this and blah, 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 blah,
These
blah.
These are the words that you say.
These are the words that you yeah. say. You know, and as yeah. you get older, you realize your child probably would have fucking fallen asleep yeah. no matter what.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I know that part of it was we didn't ask a whole lot either because we felt like they wouldn't want to be part
they
of that routine.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You know,
you don't, and you kind of don't want to like admit to them like, this
We're
is
crazy.
What I'm. This is what we do, and like this is how detailed it is. And I'm gonna like write this all out for you, and I'm gonna ask that you follow it. Like you don't want them to see that,
right? Because I can remember yeah. not having kids and saying things yeah. like, "Eh, baby sleeps in a drawer."
Right.
Like,
I know.
It'll
I
be
know.
Fine.
Yeah.
I can amuse your baby.
Yeah.
Right. I can remember being like super casual to people yeah. with kids and being like, "You're crazy. Baby gonna fall asleep and baby gonna fall asleep."
Yeah.
But when somebody said it to me during that first year, I was like, fuck you. Mm-hmm. Get away from my kid. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. What about you guys? I mean, so that was like how we kind of set ourselves up mm-hmm. to, and we didn't have anybody who had kids. And again, for us, it felt like even though like our friends, it wasn't like, again, I would trust my child yeah. with any of our friends.
Sure.
It just felt like no one was interested in your kid.
Right. And no one knows necessarily what to do or feels they have the confidence to.
Well, and you're not giving them confidence.
Right.
We've
you're not
talked
giving
about
them confidence.
Before,
right. Right. You're
know,
not asking
the
them
whole,
to help. Right.
How do people get confidence with your kid if you never
right.
give them the opportunity
exactly.
to
yep.
do stuff with
yep.
your kid? And
yep.
there's also that whole first 6 to 8 months where you just don't want anybody around your fucking kid.
Right.
I mean, and it has nothing to do right. with them. It's your psychological, like, must stay near. No matter,
right.
no matter how badly you want to get out of the house, you're just not.
Yeah.
Everybody has a different threshold of how long they're emotionally ready to leave their kid.
Mm-hmm.
What about you guys? How did...
Well, yeah. I mean, I think definitely for me, like the first 6, 8, 9 months, I just wasn't ready to leave him at all. You know, I think I left him a little bit with me. You know, there were a few like date nights where after he went to sleep,
yeah.
Jesse and I would go out and my mom would stay there. And
right.
that was like still kind of terrifying for me. So it took me a while to get on board for it. But my family is definitely, I definitely was raised like being dropped off at cousins' houses
yeah.
and being with my grandma and actually both sets of grandparents and cousins and aunts and uncles. And it was all part of my growing up, which I really have valued. And so I think like that's something I really, really want for Simon and
yeah.
really want for our family. But we're limited by the fact that our families are not here. Our
yeah.
family. But when they are here, I totally take them up on it, especially now that I'm more comfortable leaving Simon for periods of time. And now that I sort of understand what his limitations are.
Right.
And I'm willing to, you know, we went away for a weekend like a couple of months ago and my parents stayed overnight and that worked out really great. And that was awesome. Did I write a 2-page list of instructions
yeah.
for my mom? Yes, I did.
Yeah.
But that was because I had to do it. I kind of didn't care. Like, what happened after I left because I knew my parents would do a great job and I knew Simon would have fun. But, like, I just had to do it. I just had to in order to be able to leave the house.
I do think it's fair. I mean, and I think maybe people are willing to take the list.
Yeah.
So, like, for those people who want to help other people with kids, that we have a lot of people who listen that don't have kids yet or you know, maybe you have kids or whatever, help the person out and say, you give me the most detailed list of instructions. I'd love to see it. You know, like in our family, we now call it the manual. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's good to know.
Yeah.
Like, for example, Katie Bell gets hurt. Your instinct is to run over and pick a child up.
Right.
You're okay.
She doesn't like
being my God. Don't touch
her.
Don't do anything. Yeah. She wants to focus. She then wants to, you then have to ask, would you like me to pick you up? This is, I mean, even as a baby, you know, would you like to? All she wants to do is go to the bathroom and see the blood. That's all she wants to do. But like, if you don't tell somebody that, you know, it can make the child look worse, which stresses the person. See?
Yeah.
Just no one,
but the
no
other
one helped
si-
me.
Well, but the other side of this is, no matter what you prepare the person for, it is going to be different. And that's good for your child.
Yes.
You know, like, it might be painful in the moment for you or for your child, but it's good for them to have these other experiences and get exposed to the way other people do things, you know? Like, assuming everybody involved, you know,
has your best interests in mind,
like, the child is going to be fine, and it's, like, so much better for them to get exposed to different... So that is, like, a big thing that, like, kind of kicks me in the butt every time. I'm like, will it be okay if I let my my sister babysit when she hasn't seen him in, like, several months? I'm like, they're going to be fine.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to be good for everybody.
Yes. Well, did you find that it was easier, even though, like, even if you had the option of family or friends nearby, did you find it easier to hire somebody?
Well,
like, what's the psychological process like that for you?
That's a good question. I mean, I do think, I don't know if it's easier or harder is a question. I do feel that not living near family is like a major handicap. Like, it's really, and I'm always reading things that are like, best things for couples is like, drop your kid off at a relative's house once a month.
Yeah.
And I was just like, I don't have any room. But I do think that a close second probably is finding a babysitter that you really trust. And like, the funny thing is that Simon has had one babysitter since we began working with her when he was about 6 months old.
Yeah.
And she still works with us, you know, from time to time now. And she, and I think because my family isn't around, she has become like a much more important person in our lives than I think she would have been otherwise.
Yeah.
Because she's one of the very few people who really know him now.
That's
and
right.
who like really have like a close bonded relationship with him where she comes over and he loves being with her and he's fine and he kind of knows that she's there to be with him and that like she will take care of him the same way I would or Jesse would.
Right.
So that's kind of major. And then there's the added bonus of like, I'm paying you. I can give you a list
of
12,000 instructions.
Yeah. There is something for us, it always felt like easier to, you know, to have a babysitter and like I guess that's it. It's kind of easier to give somebody a list to like a total stranger who you're paying.
Yeah. You don't have to worry about
your family,
personally
member
judging you.
Who has whatever history.
Yeah.
They're bringing their own baggage in and their own memories of you and their own feelings of you. You know, this is because you're still depressed after 30 years. You know what I mean? Like, probably, but either way.
You don't think that I know my own grandchild well enough to know?
Exactly.
I know.
You know, or... Again, for us, because we just didn't do all that kind of let's be around babies all the time. I got both grandparents kind of nervous to be around a kid. And
you're like,
come on. Well, now, how am I supposed to be comfortable leaving them?
Right.
If you're not comfortable taking care of them, you know? And so, like, that gets very confusing for both parties. It's very confusing and stressful. And, but here's the thing. You and I are both about to have a second.
Right.
And it's got me thinking about it in a totally different way.
Oh, okay. So are you fed up with the way
I'm
the
fed
way
up with ruining
the
my
first
life?
Time? Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah.
I mean, as much as I'd like to, like, you know, blame the elements of, you know, the family lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And again, we really, you know, my family's on the other side of the country.
Right. But you also have a two-parent household where one person is at
usually
home.
Usually, we have the best of the scenario.
And you have one child.
Yeah.
So it does actually, I mean, you actually need less support, truly, a lot of other families might.
Absolutely. Yeah. Does that negate needing some time?
Everybody needs it.
But like, and again, I think you're right. There's something to do, you know, one kid or 20 kids.
Yeah.
Well, 20 kids. The oldest kid just watches the rest of the kids.
Right.
But but there is something good for the child or children to be exposed to different people. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, I don't ever remember getting, like, prep time with a babysitter while my mom was around. Just suddenly there was a fucking babysitter
there. Yeah.
So, you know, in all their glory.
Yeah.
But this time around, I'm like, I can't do this to myself this time. Like, mm-hmm. I am really envious of people who are like, yeah, well, I had to go to this writer's meeting, so, you know, my kid's just next door with our friend and her kid.
Mm-hmm.
What?
Yeah.
You know, like,
how did you get that?
How'd you get that? You know?
Oh, you just made friends with your neighbors?
And you just did it?
Oh. Okay.
Okay. How do you get that set up, especially given that pretty soon we're going to be heading into a more unpredictable pregnancy time
mm-hmm.
of... What if you go into labor early? What if, or just normal labor? What if you go into your normal labor? Guess who can't come with you?
Right.
Katie Bell.
Right. Got to do something.
Who do I have in place here?
Yeah.
You know, like, and how do I keep this in place once the second child comes along so that I can have this? So
right.
I know for us, you know, it's really working to get his parents on, you know, to find a better schedule
mm-hmm.
for us so that that's something we all just come to expect
mm-hmm.
Without it having to necessarily be we're going to spend a whole weekend.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because like right now, it's always connected with a long visit with us
mm-hmm.
as opposed to just Katie Bell.
Just her going there. Yeah.
So there's always this like, so the whole weekend is us actually being there, which is always nice. But at the same time, what if I just want you to come watch her before we go out mm-hmm. to dinner? You know mm-hmm. what I mean? I just lost them as babysitters, probably with that comment. but friends, we've got upstairs neighbors. Do we need to start leaving her with them sometimes? And she loves them.
Mm-hmm.
But do we need to start, like, Stefan and I going out today and having them come down and watch her? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like,
you would take their kids sometimes.
Stefan did. Stefan took their kid to Disneyland for
a
whole day.
There you go.
I know.
We already
have that done. You know, we've got friends around the corner who've got a kid Katie Bell's age that we do go over and socialize with a lot. And then I got another mom friend who's got a daughter around Katie Bell's age, and we go out. We have play dates a lot together. So there's some comfort level there.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I'm starting to try, but we haven't done the, like, I'm leaving my kid.
You know,
there's, like, this assumption with this generation of our life, like, where, you know, everything has to be you and your kid. And at 1.5, that's a given. But at 3.5, 4, she goes to school without me.
Right.
You know, like, why can't I mean, I watch people still having play dates at 7 and 8 with both parents there. I remember very clearly kids getting dropped off at my house in kindergarten.
Totally. Yeah.
You know, and like my mom not having anything to do with us.
Yeah, totally.
Just don't burn down the house. So like that's kind of our process. And then you and I have been talking about.
Yeah. Well, this is okay. I want to say a little bit how this came about.
Yeah.
Like this idea. So I had this idea of that Biz and I and Jesse and Stefan need to get like way more involved in like swapping kids so that we can all get date nights and like establish that as a thing before the newborns come, because when the newborns are here, we want to do it then too.
Yes.
And we want it to be like a thing that we can do. But the way
that totally 70s couple dumping kids at
just
each other's house.
On like, okay, like
yeah, you're going every, to Auntie Teresa and Uncle Jesse.
Be there for 3 hours and we'll be back you know, after the movie or whatever.
Trash their house.
Yeah. Yeah.
Find their secrets.
Yeah. But the way this came about is kind of like a similar, like, oh my God, I'm having a second child crisis that I had, which was when I was during the first trimester and I was crazy sick, like crazy morning sickness. And I think maybe even like the flu on top of that, because Simon was bringing stuff home from daycare, and it was winter, and I was so ill. I was like faint when I tried to stand up, and I had to just lay in bed.
Yeah.
And so Jesse was helping a lot with Simon, more than usual, like, you know, doing everything for him. And at one point, I was just crying in my bed because I was realizing, like, I don't have anyone to ask for help. I have no one. Like, I have no one who can, like, Jesse needed to go to work. He needed to go record his show. And I didn't know what to do because I was so sick that I couldn't get out of my bed, which is very rare. Right. But, like, I had this feeling like, okay, there will be times when I have this second baby where I'm totally involved in whatever the baby needs.
Yeah.
And I'm gonna need help. Like, I'm gonna need help. And I totally...
And I don't want to pay for it.
right. No, but no, it's but those in-between times. It's not about, like, a babysitter coming over for 4 hours. It's about having a family member just drop by and say, what do you need? Do you need milk? Do you need, you know, what do you need? And I flipped out so bad that Jesse comes to bed that night and I'm, like, telling him that we need to move back to Northern California. I mean, we have a whole business here. Like, we have employees, we have an office, we have our lives here. And I was totally convinced, like, this is the only way it's going to work.
I
like,
know.
We're about to have another child. Like, we'll move there and we can fly down during the week. We can take turns flying down. I was like, I will solve this problem. Like, and Jesse was just like very sweet about it, you know, and just like, yeah, we're never going to do that. And, you know, it's going to be okay, but we're never going to be doing that. Like, that's not real, you know. And of course, like, I've started feeling better and came out of it, but I did have something good came out of it, which was that, like, I was like, okay, who do we have here?
Yeah, who do we know?
And I was like, hello, Business 7 have children and they're about to have another one too. Like, why are we not
doing
this?
We don't drop our kids on purpose.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I know, like, it'll be different for our kids, you know, but it'll be fine. And I was like, I really hope that they're up for this. And you said that you were, so.
Yeah, no, we're totally up for it. It's a good idea because I think there's something about establishing, again, if you don't come from a giant family and you don't come from, like, or from being sort of socialized early on to do that sort of thing, for that to be a norm, I feel this is definitely one of those shows where, like, half our listeners are going to be like, what the fuck is wrong with you? Why weren't you guys swapping kids to begin with?
I know.
You guys are idiots.
I know.
judging us. That's fair this time around. This time around, I accept all judgment.
They might also be judging us for something that we're not as self-aware about.
Oh, good. That's always better. No, but, like, there's something about the no guilt. You know, and I don't mean like, I mean, like, I joke about, like, and you don't have to pay for it, but that's really helpful. And two, the no guilt of, like, if you called me at 2 a.m. and said, something's happening.
Yeah.
I need you to come get Simon.
Yeah.
I would say, okay, we're coming to get Simon.
Exactly.
You know, like, not a big deal.
Yeah.
And there'd be no guilt with that. And what's weird is that probably more of our friends and family all feel that way.
They totally do. Yeah.
But there's something about the not asking that, like,
I think it might be something about, like, how our culture is evolving right now, where there's a lot more just, like, paying for stuff and, like, and being, it's the same thing as kind of like the, like, weird anti-socialism of, like, suburbs and stuff where, like, you don't want to ask for help. You want to be, like, really self-sufficient and you take care of
everything. You're not supposed to watch somebody else's kids. Like, I don't know if that's a thing,
but it feels like it might be because this conversation feels in a way similar to our fear conversation where we were talking about, like, letting our kids go, basically.
Well,
and
there's,
like,
so much sort of preciousness about what kids need right now and what you're supposed to, in so many different ways you're being told you're supposed to be raising your kids.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you're right. Like, I remember being in my neighborhood and knowing at any point in time somebody could be looking out the window watching me and telling my parents.
Right.
If I'm behaving badly, I just assumed that was a given.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
they,
like,
had every
much
right.
more people involved.
They had every right to come out and tell me to get out of their yard. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, stop digging in my yard, Elizabeth Ellis. I'm going to tell your mama. You know what
was
I mean?
Was that a big problem for you when you were a kid? Yeah.
Well, there was a creek, a.k.a. a ditch, you know, that you had to, like, walk through this woman's yard. Like, the only neighbor in the whole neighborhood who didn't want you walking through their yard.
You had to
But
walk.
You got to, how else am I going to get to the creek?
Yeah.
To play in probably things that didn't belong in the creek. It probably wasn't a creek in retrospect. I do wonder if there is like some sort of pressure not to ask.
Yeah, like I can do it. I'll be fine.
I'll do it. I've got to be strong enough to do it.
But the reality is we can't do it. We do need help.
God, just like an hour. Because like Stefan and I, we lost our babysitter because she went and got a real job. And not the babysitter. I mean, she became a psychiatrist.
Okay.
She finished her degree in psychiatry and became a paid psychiatrist.
Okay.
We have not gotten a new babysitter because, again, I started working from like that. There was a transition of me starting to work more from like being home.
Yeah.
And we were settled finally into, you know, LA, blah, blah, blah. So we just never did it. And now it's just sort of a given that we're never going to go see a movie together.
Unless, right.
You know, like it's just kind of
drop her off at the Thorn household.
At the Thorn household. Everybody's going to be like, duh, you idiots.
I know. I know it took us so long to figure this out.
We're idiots.
At least we arrived at this.
Yes.
At least we got here. Yeah.
God. I think we should actually talk to somebody who may need a support team, possibly even more.
Possibly more.
There are possibly people who need support teams more than us.
There might be people who need support teams more.
I don't know if you've heard this, but when you only have one kid, it's not a big deal.
Yeah.
And, well, you know what? Life is fucking easy with my one child.
It is. It's
the
great.
Best.
That's
it's
why we're best. Having more, because we have no idea.
That's
what
right,
we're
because it's so
into.
Easy. Let's have
so
another.
Easy.
Support teams, fuck you. We do this all by ourselves. So on next week's One Bad Mother, you'll hear us with our kids in here because no one wants to help us. All right, so let's do some genius and fails.
Great.
Let's talk to our very special guest. Let's listen to some rants. Good times.
I'm Cameron Esposito, and I'm the host of Maximum Fun's new podcast, Wham Bam Pow, a sci-fi movie show and action movies also. Did I forget to say action movies? Every week I'll be joined by Mr.
Ricky Carmona
and Ms.
Rhea Butcher.
And we are going to chat about films, we're going to tell jokes, we're going to be hilarious, we're going to play games, we're going to have guests, we're going to give reviews, it's going to blow your mind. If you want to listen to the show, you can find it at MaximumFun.org or you can subscribe on iTunes. Can you believe how many things I just listed?
So many things.
Wow!
That's great.
Hey, you know what it's time for? This week's Genius and Fails. This is the part of the show where we share our genius moment of the week, as well as our failures, and feel better about ourselves by hearing yours. You can share some of your own by calling 206-350-9485. That's 206-350-9485.
Teresa.
Mm-hmm.
Let's do Genius and Fails.
Great.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
I saw what you did.
Oh, my God.
I'm paying attention.
Wow.
You, Mom, are a genius.
Oh, my God. That's fucking genius.
Genius moments.
Yeah.
What you got?
So, well, it's just kind of a nice thing. Simon's getting to the point where, you know, he's going to be 2 in August. It's pretty soon.
Can't believe his birthday's August, too.
Yeah, August 5th.
And Katie Bell's
is they're really close.
They're really, everybody, you're like the 5th. Oh, I gotta edit this out. Anyway.
So he's gonna be 2 soon, and he's starting to take more responsibility for things around the house. You know, he can help with little things. He has to help us clean up his room every day, you know, before bed. And he's, overall, he really likes it. You know, he really likes to help. But, you know, there are those moments where I'll ask him to do something, and he really is like stubborn about, no, I don't want to do that right now. And I had like a couple times where like my instant reaction was like kind of panicky, like I'm not gonna discipline him yet, like he's too little for like you must do this, you little tiny
I am your
tiny,
mama
precious angel, like,
because
no.
I said so.
So I didn't, I was like, oh my God, what do I do? But then I said, the last couple of times he's done it, I've just been like, do you need a little help? And he goes, uh-huh. And then I help him, and he totally does it. And it's not like, do you need help? Okay, Mom's going to do it for you. It's basically like, he just wanted me to like participate with him and totally did it, and it was great. And it just made me think like, oh, yeah, like, if I want him to succeed at something, if my goal is to get him to succeed at something, I can make that happen. just by having his success be my goal rather than like, I'm going to teach you a lesson be my goal. You know what I mean?
That is a nice way to put it. Okay. Because Katie Bell is in a total, I can do it all myself.
Oh.
So, which is really annoying because, like, it's time to clean up your room kind of thing. So, like, when we hit that moment.
So then it, like, takes her forever.
When she says no, it's no. Oh. Do you want Mama to help? Yeah. No. So, for me, it's this. Well, then there'll be no books tonight or no this or goodbye tiaras.
Yeah, I don't think he would understand
that. We love consequences. I'm like, oh, Katie Bell, do you want to be fancy all the time and only wear 3 dresses?
Mm-hmm.
Guess what's going away? You're going to have to wear shorts. Speaking of fancy dresses, my genius moment, Katie Bell has decided that she only wants to wear these 3 dresses that she has that are extra twirly and extra fancy.
Mm-hmm.
We have a closet full of skirts that are twirly. We have a closet full of sparkly tank
has
tops.
To be a dress.
Nope. It's these 3 dresses. So I was dumping clothes in the garage the other day to, you know, put back in rotation later or whatever. And I find an old dress of hers that she's grown out of that had a very purple, ruffly skirt. She's outgrown it. Took it. Cut right through the middle.
Mm-hmm.
The skirt part, the bottom of it off.
Huh?
Sewed it to a really cute tank top that she'd never worn.
Oh.
Boom. Fucking dress.
Yeah.
She put it on, and it's now one of 4 dresses that she wears. I was like, I'm going to do this to all the clothes.
That's awesome.
And then we went through all the rest of her clothes, and none of them worked quite the same way.
Yeah.
But I was like, yes.
That's awesome.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I felt like a super genius.
No, it's great.
Yeah. Yeah. It's great. So there.
Okay.
Done.
A genius moment came yesterday when I took my just turned 2-year-old daughter to the doctor. And again, the doctor's office is backed up, and I didn't pack any sort of toys or books or stickers or anything. And she had already run through the snack while we were in the waiting room. So now we're in the exam room waiting for the doctor. And I came up with the invisible ball game. I pretend to throw a ball. She runs into the corner, picks it up, throws it back to me. And we played that for 15 minutes. I haven't been able to do anything for 15 minutes nonstop with a 2-year-old. So genius moment for me. Oh,
that's
and Tia,
awesome.
She likes to play that ball in the house now, or the game in the house now. So it is the perfect ball game you can play in any house because the ball will not destroy anything in your home.
I'm totally going to use that like
that
later
is
today.
Genius. Kids like the invisible shit.
It's really fun.
Dumb.
It really works.
Dumb kids, it's the
weird.
Best. It's the best. Imaginations. Fail.
You suck.
Teresa.
Yeah.
I really failed.
Oh.
I'm going to go first this week.
Are you sure you should go first if yours is really
Mine's really,
really bad?
All right. Why don't you go first?
Okay.
Don't ever change.
I want you to top mine.
This is a fail.
Okay.
Because
I feel like my failures are always way worse than yours.
This one's pretty good. It's a pretty good fail.
Okay. So I have been trying to instill good habits in Simon, like, you know, not throwing stuff everywhere
sure.
and, like, not eating with his mouth full and stuff. And I realized the other day, like, twice in one day that I'm just modeling the exact opposite of what he's supposed to be doing. Like he does this thing where he'll go, like, if there's, like, I'm folding laundry and it's on the chair in his room, he'll just go up and just throw all the clothes on the floor and climb up there.
Sure.
And I'm like, no, I've been folding and da-da-da.
Right.
And then, like, later that day, there was a pile of books on the chair, and I was really tired, and I was trying to make room, and I was holding him, and I just threw all the books on the floor before I sat down, and I was like, oh, my God. And then literally, like, later that day, he's eating at the, we're eating at the table together, and he's talking to me with food in his mouth.
Right.
And I'm like, I can't understand you because you have food in your mouth. And I'm realizing as
mouth
I'm saying
full
this,
of food.
Mouthful, I have a mouth completely full of food.
Yeah, we've run into that as well. That is a pretty tough one. That's great because they do. It's true. They learned it from you, Mom.
Yeah, they
learned it from me.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Brutal.
That is brutal.
Okay.
Well, because then you have to work at
right,
changing
then I
yourself.
Have to get better. I know.
Ugh. All right, so we got invited to go swimming with some friends at this, you know, swimming club or whatever. And it's
a swimming
club. It's a swimming club.
Oh.
I know. and you know what? It's awesome.
Okay.
It is amazing. It is. They have like a whole pool that's only 3 feet deep, but it's like really big.
Ooh.
For kids under five. So like Katie Bell can actually walk in it,
right.
but also practice her swimming. And
right.
like I can like sit on the side and talk to my friend and their lifeguards. And they're just
amazing.
Playing in the pool.
Amazing.
Like kids are supposed to do.
I kind of hate you right now, so I hope you get
it's
to the point
awesome.
Of saying something.
All right, so we've gone in the past a couple of times. Anyway, we get this last minute call that's like, hey, we're going to the pool. Do you guys want to come? Steph and I had totally other plans. We were literally about to walk out the door to go do something else. And we were like, pool? Yes. So we get I took Katie Bell's swimsuit off the hook. We put everything together to go. We get in the car. We get to the pool. And I don't have the swimsuit.
Oh.
Yeah. So, I mean, we get there and I'm like, I open the bag. And yeah. I mean, I have everything in the bag. I have just done such a great job packing. So, Stefan's got to drive back to the house and Katie Bell has to wait surrounded by pools and kids swimming.
Yeah.
So, fail.
You suck.
I suck.
I wanted to share my fail moment, which is pretty remarkable considering I haven't even had a child yet. I'm 7 months pregnant. And as soon as I found out I was knocked up, I went to Costco and bought a giant thing of generic Tylenol, since that's like the only baby non-murdering painkiller you're allowed to take. And so I've been taking this generic Tylenol for like 6 months, just about every day, because, you know, stuff hurts. And then 3 days ago, I look at it and see where it says in big letters, acetaminophen, 250 milligrams. That's the part I saw when I was at Costco. And then in tiny, tiny, tiny little letters after that, it says aspirin, 250 milligrams, and also 65 milligrams of caffeine. So I was
pretty
concerned that I'd murdered my baby. It turned out fine. I called the nurse's line at my doctor in a complete panic, and they said, you know, if the aspirin was going to murder your baby, it would have been murdered already, basically. and I guess just bonus points for caffeine. I don't know. I've switched back to regular Tylenol, but that's the story about how I almost murdered my fetus pal.
You know what? Let me just tell you.
Horrible.
I just want this listener to know. I just want you to know that I'm like, you know, I do all these calls at once. Like, I'll sit there and go through, like, all the calls kind of at once and just listen, and it's always very funny. I hit this one. And I have a giant thing of Tylenol from Costco, right? And so I'm like this. Oh, like I hurl the computer to the side. Like running to the... I was like, Stefan, bring me the Tylenol. Like, whatever. So we get the Tylenol, and I look at it, and I... Like, whatever I have is I have... Mine's not that one. Uh-huh. But, I mean, I went over that with, like, a... Stefan's like, what is your problem? I'm like, oh, this listener, she just, like, totally didn't see the thing. And I know I didn't see the thing. And that they look just like the Tylenol capsules. That's what I go with. So
like, every day for the first 7 months.
I love it. Oh, well, I'll just take this. Just take this every day for every day. Everything hurts. Well, we're glad you didn't murder your baby.
Yes.
I know it would make us feel better.
Yeah.
Let's call a mom.
Yeah, let's call a mom.
Okay.
You are the greatest mom I've ever known. I love you. I love you. When I have a problem, I call you on the phone. I love you. I love you.
Teresa.
Yes.
Let's call a mom.
Great.
Oh, good. I love calling moms. And today we are calling Eleni Mandel, a singer-songwriter whose latest album is called I Can See the Future, which was actually her first album since becoming a single mom to twins using a sperm donor. Hot damn.
Dang.
Let's talk to Eleni Mandel. Hello, Eleni.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm great.
Good.
I've never heard such an enthusiastic endorsement of using a sperm.
I gotta tell you,
we're pumped.
You may
about
be
it.
The most thrilling, the most like thrilling mom scenario guest we've had on here yet in terms of their experience. We try and get a nice round, diverse group of moms on the show, but You're our first sperm donor.
All right.
We're pretty excited. You're our first. We always ask our guests to tell us who's living in their house. Can you please tell us who lives in your house?
In my house is myself, my son Rex, and my daughter Della.
And they're twins, and how old are they?
They are a little over 2.5.
Yeah,
all right. Getting into a good zone.
Yeah. You are getting into a good zone.
Cool. Any pets?
No pets.
No pets.
You didn't want to take that on as well?
No,
just kids?
I think about it. They love animals. Mm-hmm. And I think, how much they'd adore a kitten. And then I think about the kitten scratching the furniture and litter box. And then I'm like, no.
And how you just need so many more things to take care of than you already have.
You know what's great in a house with kids? Hair.
Right.
Lots of hair.
Yeah. And I'm maybe the laziest person ever. I got a really expensive, beautiful vacuum. And I thought, I'm totally going to fire my cleaning lady because I love this vacuum so much. I'm going to do it all myself. And that happened one time. And I thought, I'm going to totally work my ass off so I can always have a cleaning lady.
It's like that band. I have those fantasy days because we're pregnant with number two, where I'm like, I'm just going to have on my registry, if anybody even pays attention to second child registries,
which
cleaning lady. Cleaning service.
Awesome.
I need a cleaning service.
I thought you were going to say vacuum.
Vacuum. All right. Well, let's get to the good stuff.
First of all, I don't believe that you're lazy.
I doubt
it. Because
you have two twins.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you. If you can see what I do, I'm – go on.
No. I was just going to say – I don't know. I think that's a good segue into
the first question, which is, what lazy person decides to purposely become a single mom with using a sperm donor, which is a whole process?
It is.
And so tell us about the process, because you also, you know, I know when you're going through the whole sperm donor process, I mean, you know, do you have options to have the twins? I mean, I'm very bad at the medical science behind insemination. Were you looking to have twins? Were you?
Well, I knew I wanted to have more than one kid, so I thought, and I have friends that have twins, so I thought that, you know, that would be convenient.
how'd that work out?
Yeah. But, you know, I think for the first, I'd say the first 2 years of their life, I kept thinking, should I have another one?
Mm.
And then now I'm like, that would be the craziest thing I could ever do.
Well, take us back to the process, the whole decision process, and what led you to do it.
I've always wanted to have kids. I always knew that that was really important to me, and that having a family was definitely a goal of mine. And of course, I spent a lot of my 20s and 30s dating the wrong guy and thinking, well, it doesn't matter as long as I get married and have kids. And now I'm, of course, exceedingly grateful I didn't marry any of those guys. So when I finally, at 39 years old, when it became very clear that I had to act quickly and the boyfriend I had didn't want to have kids, so we broke up, we were actually sort of segueing apart when I started looking through sperm donors, and he's now their sort of fake uncle / nanny when I go on tour. So, but he even looked at profiles. So it kind of all happens online now, and
wow.
And it felt really sad when I started. I cried, thought, like, I can't believe this is my life. And it also has a science fiction element to it. You know, you're shopping for sperm on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
Looking at baby pictures of strangers. And
do they show you pictures of, like, what?
Well, you have to actually buy pieces of information. You have to buy, if you want to hear their voice, you have to buy an audio interview, and you have to buy a photograph. Not all of them will show you photographs of themselves, and not all of them will show you anything but baby photos.
So baby photos of themselves, not baby photos of other babies that have come from their sperm.
It's kind of amazing, though, when you look at a lot of baby photos, and you think, well, how can you judge by a baby? And then you look, and you're like, I definitely don't want that guy to be the
bottom. Oh, that's amazing.
You just know.
You're like, I don't want that coming out of me.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you have to start, I guess, getting your brain around all the genetics that, you know, come with the sperm. Because, you know, I guess you don't. I mean, it's just not something I would have necessarily.
I'm curious about, because, like, I have friends who use a sperm donor, and I'm curious about, you know, the part of it that may feel a little bit like choosing a mate and like looking for the qualities that maybe you would look for in a mate and versus like the qualities that you would look for in, you know, the child that's going to come from this person will do well in life. And whether, like, there's obviously a lot of crossover there, but like, I know that, you know, my friends in particular, I think they were having this conflict about like, how important is it that the donor be really good looking? Because like, maybe you don't care who you fall in love with if they're so good looking, but maybe you want your child to like be better off in life. And so maybe you want to pick a better looking sperm donor?
I think that's why in the end it was really great to choose a donor based only on the baby picture because when you can see some adult pictures, then you do think, well, would I date that guy?
Right.
Like, I've never even met someone who wore a shirt like that, you know?
Right.
So I kind of liked limiting some information because it got confusing.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a thing called staph impressions from the firm, the cryobank that I ended up using, where they describe the person for you, and they don't always talk about their looks. Sometimes they're like, he's very polite, and he always remembered my name. And then one of them said something like, if there was going to be a male model, it would be him. And you realize that's not really enough.
Right. Yeah.
And you're also like, who is this person? Like, I want to see a picture of the person that judged him.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Who's making the judgment call on this?
Yeah.
So I actually, the sperm donor that I chose is someone I probably never would have dated because we never would have met. He is an astrophysicist, or he was working towards his PhD in astrophysics with long hair. Loves classic rock, plays the violin, and writes science fiction on the side. You know, our paths would not have crossed.
Yeah.
Have you, have you seen your kids are 2.5 and watching their personalities develop and you being the main caregiver in their life, do you see any elements coming from them that you're like, I wonder if this has to do with the sperm donor or if this is just who my kid is or is this... You know, my daughter is 3.5 and she's like, you know, we joke about it all the time. She's like really into like being fancy and like wearing like there are a lot of things that she does that are neither my husband or I. You know what I mean? Like it has nothing to do with either one of us outside of allowing her the opportunity to explore things that she's interested in.
Yeah.
So have you.
I mean, the only thing that. Because he was into science, and obviously he's a really intelligent sperm donor if he was telling the truth. I'm sort of like excited for when they're in school to like see their brains explode and looking forward to them taking care of me in my old age because they're going to be millionaires.
Or they're going to get your singer-songwriter, Gene.
Right. Right.
They're going to be artists. Oh.
But one of the really dumb reasons that I considered this donor was because his baby picture, I thought, well, he kind of has a wide nose and I have a thin nose.
Mm.
So I thought, well, maybe that'll sort of even out.
Yeah. The nose is, yeah.
Yeah. So my daughter actually definitely has his nose.
Aww.
And it's very cute on her. But sometimes, you know, I'm like, very curious what that nose will look like as an adult.
Yeah.
I don't know any people with that nose. And they also have really long eyelashes, which they definitely didn't get for me.
Wow.
That's nice.
But the rest of it, I feel like my daughter and I are very similar. And because my son is, you know, he's a boy, so I'm not comparing us in the same way.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, it's all really fascinating, and I find it incredibly interesting, watching them learn and grow and become little people.
Okay, so more relevant to some of the things we've been talking about today on the show in terms of support systems and how each family sort of creates that for themselves. You know, again, you made the decision to be to go in this by yourself. This wasn't a result of divorce. This wasn't a result of an accidental one-night stand. This was, I mean, you very, this was like something you really decided to go take control of and go do. And twins to boot. Yeah. I mean, no one thinks, even though you're like, yeah, we'll get two at once, no one thinks that's necessarily going to be smooth. We all know. Everybody in the back of their mind knows this could be tricky. How did you... Did you take the same amount of care in setting up, making sure that you had a support team around you or that your life was in a location where you had support available to you as you did in picking a sperm donor?
Well, I think that I probably couldn't have made this decision if I didn't have the kind of family that I have. I live in Los Angeles near most, I'm from here, so most of my family is here. And even though, you know, my parents, I was 41 when I had my kids, so my parents are older, and they're definitely not like in the trenches the way they might have been if I had kids in my 20s.
Right.
But I think without them being emotionally supportive of it, I think their excitement about it sort of grew as it became more real. I think in the beginning they might have thought it was a little crazy, but they didn't say it outright, at least. They didn't try to get me not to do it. They helped me financially, and then I have aunts and uncles and grandmother and brothers and sisters nearby, and definitely I would say there are maybe like two or three people in the family that really helped me, but I think because there's so many people around, I just really felt like I could do it.
Right.
I always say that being a waitress really helps being a mom, and not for jokey reasons, like, well, because you carry stuff a lot, but because you really learn to multitask when you're a waitress, and
yeah.
I was one for a long time. And so to me, like, this kind of doing a lot of stuff isn't really that hard. The first year is really challenging, but yeah, I think as far as support goes, I've got a lot of great friends. Not all of them turn out to really care anything about children or babies. Some of my best friends have maybe seen my kids twice in 3 years. But I also have great friends that have kids who have been really helpful. And, you know, so yeah, I guess I really felt like with the friends and family I have in town that I could do it. And my friends who have twins told me the first year will be the worst year of your life.
Mm.
So I didn't have super rainbow, you know, sunshine expectations.
That is so cool of your friends.
That's really cool of your friends, because
you should like write them
totally
a letter
serious
of thanks
about that.
Yeah.
Because we do joke on the show about like the lies that are fed to moms before they have kids.
Or just
kids.
The information that's withheld.
Or withheld, maybe not lies,
yeah,
just
I mean,
withheld.
It can be really boring. I sat in my apartment for months
the
when
boredom.
They were born with those curtains drawn and no sound.
Yeah.
And one day I realized I can actually turn the radio on and open the blinds.
Yeah.
You're sort of in a really confused state.
You are. Yeah.
I think because my expectations were really realistic, I think I've maybe even had a better time than people with husbands and one baby.
Yeah, I could imagine that. But I was wondering though, just physically, I mean, you kind of explained it when you said, you know, you learned how to multitask when you were a waitress. But just, you know, physically, I know for me, being alone with the baby, with one baby was sometimes fine. But then other times, you know, it was really hard. And I'm just curious, like, if you can paint a picture just like physically how that worked with two children when
well,
they were, you know,
the
little.
The lazy thing comes in really handy. Because I really didn't try to do that much.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't try to like build sandcastles with them or teach them how to knit. I was like, there's your swing, sit and knit, and I'll be over here reading a book.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, that doesn't happen for hours at a time. But, you know, when they're really little, they're sleeping a lot.
Mm-hmm.
They're, I don't know. I mean, sometimes I think back and I can't even remember how I did it. But I had two swings and two bouncy feet and blankets all over the place because they spit up a lot.
I remember being at the park and watching a woman with her twins. And, like, every time one twin was going one direction, like, the other was going the opposite direction. You know what I mean? Like, they were never – she'd get, like, one on the slide, and she would have to – and I actually think there was some benefit, no matter what kind of nightmare that looked like, those kids realize right away that their mom's not always with them the 24 hours. Like – yeah. They're learning at an early age that they do need to entertain themselves and each other, and which I think
and that they can
and that they can
and that it's fine
and that they can it's totally fine and like you said with the book, I mean, it's just about establishing patterns, whether they respect your rule of I'm just going to be sitting here reading a book while you do that, the pattern's getting established which is nice.
And I mean, things like parks, I couldn't really go to parks for a long time, and only when I had one friend whose kid was in high school, and she loved babies, so she would go to the park with me. And then I found other parks that have gates around them, which is the greatest thing in the world.
Mm.
You know, you sort of realize, well, I'm kind of hunkered down for as long as it takes for them to be a little sturdier and understand English.
Right. Right. Well, do you think, so which one's turning out to be the evil twin?
Oh, God, you know, it's crazy how they switch places.
Yeah.
I really thought,
boy, girl,
oh, my daughter is so complicated. Just like me. We're a little moody. And then 4 months later, she was such a breeze and he was on a tear. So, it keeps you on your toes.
Well, okay, so you're a singer-songwriter, you lived this creative life, and I know sometimes I think people underestimate how hard it is to actually be living a creative career and having that sort of lifestyle with kids, because it's really hard sometimes to wrangle creativity into like a schedule, into a 9-to-5 kind of role, especially... I would think something with music where you do have to be public. You've got to, you know, go out to promote. How did having the kids affect your professional life, and how did you make it work, or did you possibly, have you possibly not figured out how to make it work yet, which is also totally fine.
I mean, I think one really important thing, and probably with anything in life, is just setting a goal. So I had a goal that I was going to continue to have a creative life, and it's just kind of in my mind, which leads me down that path even when it gets difficult. I don't think I really stopped doing music at all. I'm in a band called The Living Sisters, as well as having my own small, you know, singer-songwriter career. And we were just finishing up recording when I was in the hospital having the kids. And then I had started a record and when I was like 8 months pregnant. So when they were about 8 months old, I went back in the studio and finished that. And just get babysitters. You know, I have friends who are married with very financially secure and are musicians and they don't tour anymore. But I really love touring and I love the idea of my kids seeing the world. And it's obviously important for my career that I tour, so I just bring them with me and I bring someone to help. And then on the flip side, I can't afford to take a band anymore, but I've also learned to really enjoy performing solo. I guess it's sort of just who I am. I can't imagine not doing it. Although I also think I have to go back to school and become a nurse or something. I don't know how I'm going to pay for college like this. But I just kept going, just trekking along.
That's really inspiring.
That's awesome.
I'm like, I don't want to fucking go to the grocery store.
Well, that I'm really bad at.
True,
I
that's
hate
true.
Going to the grocery store. And now I have to do it, you know, 3 times a week or something.
Oh, that you're right. Grocery stores and creative life are two totally different things. But that is very inspiring and kind of helps, I think, remind all of us that it is about setting the small goal or whatever that goal is and just staying focused. And kids are, in fact, adaptable no matter how crazy one's brain gets that they may not be. Well, Eleni, thanks so much for sharing the entire experience and process with us and how it's working out. I just, it's been really cool talking to you.
Thanks. You guys are great, and I love your show, and I love being a mom, even as crazy as it is. Going to leave a wholesome message. It's awesome.
Yeah, we keep wrestling with the fact that we actually love being mom. Okay, yeah, maybe I am the only person.
No, it always like reveals itself, and we're like, oops, we love being moms.
We really are enjoying this. Why is our culture so against it? Thank you so much for joining us, and we're going to make sure that we link up to your last album, and we'll keep an eye out for the new album when that comes out and make sure our listeners know, and hook them up with all your information. And thank you so very much.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks, both of you. It was really fun.
All right, cool. we'll talk soon. Thanks.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye. Got a bun in the oven, still me loving. Will you be my only one? Oh, my gosh, she was great.
Yeah.
She was great.
Yeah.
And it reminds me
that we're crazy.
That we're completely crazy. I'm going to have to go find like sad violin like music to play under our entire topic discussion today, everybody.
No, but she did say like straight up right at the beginning the way she knew she could do this is she has all this family around to help. So
right.
You know, it's cool.
Our life is horrible. No, you know how I'll realize our life is not so horrible? Listening to some mom have a breakdown on our show.
I am calling from the parking lot of a grocery store where I have just purchased a gross of Clorox wipes and some nitrile gloves and some over-the-ear masks because 4 days ago when I thought maybe my husband had just fed my 15-month-old son too many berries and that made him throw up. Nope. He had norovirus. The next day I got it, and the next day my husband got it, and the next day my mom got it. And now my father-in-law has it.
There goes
the support
team.
Who knows who else will get it? Because we thought that he just ate too many berries. But no, he's just patient zero. And so then what happens this morning, I get my fucking period for the first time after stopping breastfeeding. And apparently it's 1,000 times worse than when I had it before I got pregnant. That's another thing they don't tell you, I guess, because I call my girlfriends and they're all like, oh, yeah, that happened to me, too. So thanks a lot, everybody.
That is too many horrible things coming out of too many places.
Yes, I'm so sorry.
So sorry. That is... awful.
I see health in your future. I hope you're all better now.
I also see your support team deserting you.
Yeah.
I like that your 15-month-old just took out the entire team.
Yeah.
The entire team. That is the worst. Well, you are doing a good job, Mom.
Yes.
You are. And I think what we're coming away from the show today is a few things. One, Teresa and I have it really awful.
It's really tough.
Everybody feel bad for us and our loving husbands and great kids and no support team and families that totally help if they just live near us. No. But that no matter what your situation is, the following things are true no matter what your brain is telling you. Your children are adaptable. If you leave them with somebody else who likes them, they will be fine.
Yes.
No child has ever died from crying. They will be fine. You will also survive. No mom has ever died from crying. It's important to establish a team, even if you somehow forgot to do that before you had your kid or your 10 kids or whatever. You can start one at any point in time. We as friends of moms and we as moms and dads should all let go of the guilt and be honest with each other. You want to call me at 2 o'clock in the morning? Call me at 2 o'clock in the morning. I'm going to be okay. Maybe that's all it takes is people being a little more upfront with each other. I really am interested in watching your kid and I don't feel bad about it. And I'm also not going to make you feel bad if you don't want to leave your kid with me this week because you're just not ready. You know what I mean? Like, this isn't like a one-time offer. So, you know, we all need to get better at asking. We all need to get better at offering. And we all need to get better at giving ourselves a break. You know? It's okay. So, moms, dads, single moms, single dads, sperm donors, whoever you are out there, you're doing an amazing job especially you sperm donors. And once again, we want to thank our guests, Eleni Mandel. And as always, it's fun to hear everybody's rants and fails and genius moments. And
you guys are doing great.
You guys are doing an awesome job.
You're probably doing way better than Teresa and I. And Teresa, you're doing a good job.
So are you, Biz.
Thanks. Everybody have a good week.
See you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
I got to low down mama blues. I got to low down mama blues. Got to low down mama blues. Low down mama blues. Got to low down mama blues. Got to low down mama blues. You know that right.
We'd like to thank Max Fun, Lindsay Pavlos, our engineer, our husbands Stefan Lawrence and Jesse Thorne, our perfect children who provide us with inspiration to say all these horrible things, and of course, you, our listeners. To find out more about the songs you heard on today's podcast and more about the show, please go to MaximumFun.org.
One Bad Mother is a member of the Maximum Fun family of podcasts. To support the show, visit MaximumFun.org and click on Donate.
Do you have a genius or fail moment you'd like to share on the show? Then leave us a message at 206-350-9485. Full-on rage-induced rants are also welcome.
Well, Daddy may be fussing by, got low down mama blues. Oh, said Daddy, baby, fussing by, got low down mama blues.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.